Welcome back to the Swim Swim Breakdown. I am your host, Coleman Hodges, coming to you from Austin, Texas, joined by Yin-Yin Lee from Evanston, Illinois. Yin-Yin, it's been a while. How are things? How's college?
I'm doing good. It's 2 p.m. and I haven't eaten lunch yet. That's the one concern, and a lot of that's because of the podcast. But other than that, I'm doing great.
We appreciate your sacrifice and hope that you have time to eat lunch after this recording.
Love a nice little 3 p.m. lunch.
I often go for the 3 p.m. lunch. It's not always ideal, but sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into swimming. We have a lot of ground to cover this week because we saw two very exciting swim meets last weekend. And we're not even going to start with those. We are starting with the men's NC2A psych sheets that dropped just last night. The biggest surprise of which is that Mr. Leon Marchand will be swimming the 500 free over the 200 IM at the 2024 NC2A Champs. He just broke the NC2A record in the 500 free, if you didn't know, at the Pac-12 Championships going 406.1. Yin-Yin, what do you think Leon will go in the 500 free at NC2A's? He's already been 406. And notably, he was 334 in the 400 IM the next day, a 6-second ad for him.
God, not this kind of mental gymnastics. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying the 359 talk. But I'm going to be conservative and say he goes 404 high, just because the reason why he broke the NCAA record in the 500 free because that was his first time swimming at a big meet, whereas in his other big events, the 400 IM and the 200 breast, he really reached his max, like his top potential at NCAA. So the fact that he didn't go best times in those two events makes more sense. And I just think you can only drop so much. He already dropped a second from his previous time last year. And I think dropping another second seems like a pretty reasonable expectation for a guy who has constantly performed his best at NCAAs. And we have to remember, that's not the case for every swimmer on every team. So I don't know. I feel like if you expect him to drop 6 seconds off in an event where he already went best time, that's a little unrealistic. So I'm going with 404 high.
I think that is a great guess and a great rationale. And I would love to get on the 359 hype train, but I think we have to remember that he just went the fastest of all time. I was going to say, and he can't just go 6 seconds faster than
exactly.
But he's been 4 seconds faster than anyone in history in the 400 IM, which is pretty, I made the mistake last year of saying, listen, Leon can't go that much faster than the fastest of all time, and was wrong. I'm gonna just one up you slightly. I think he'll go 404 low.
Okay, that's fair.
I think a 2-second drop, but again, I've underestimated Leon before. I think he can go faster than Pac-12s. I don't think he's gonna go 359. But the crazy part is there's so many other times in between 359 and 406.1 where he's already been that he could very possibly go, and it's a 500, so there's so much wiggle room, I think.
Yeah, and that's the problem I have with the 359 predictions, because if he goes 401, that's still ridiculous, but people are going to be like, oh, it wasn't 359.
let's just remember that even if he doesn't break a big barrier, like 4 minutes, any time he goes that's faster than his best time will be a huge barrier broken. 406. People, no one's ever been under 406.
Yeah. People have been knocking on that door for a long time, ever since Kieran Smith broke the record, but he was the first one to do it since Kieran. The first to beat Kieran, not the first to go 406, because Matt Sates also went 406. But I don't think there's any other guy right now in the NCAA that had these ridiculous over projections put on him. I don't think Kate Douglas got that last year, but it's just when he goes a time, everyone just expects him to be 6 seconds faster because Drew Kibler said he was untapered. And I feel like at this
point, you, Drew Kibler,
we're at a stage where the line between tapered and not tapered doesn't matter as much as it used to, especially in the context of a team like ASU. So I'm not buying that. And I don't think it's reasonable to expect that of anyone, but people just do it because he's Leon Marchand. Like, this is totally unrelated, but there are people who think he's a co-favorite to win the 200 breast when Chin Haiyang is a second faster than him. Like, that's not how it works. But anyways, that was my little spiel.
I don't know. I think he has, well, that's a 500 200 breast at the Olympics is a different conversation for a different day, I think. I think we forget that 7 years ago, not even close to a decade ago, the record and the fastest anyone had ever swum in the 500 free was 4.08.4, right? And it's gotten over two seconds faster than that in the last 7 years. And now people think that it's going to get 6 seconds faster than that. I don't buy it, but yeah. He is certainly one of a kind, and I think he very well could drop that record down a couple more seconds.
Watch me be on Freezing Cold Takes in 2 weeks after he blows the 4 minute.
We will see what happens. I do want to get your opinion on other surprises from the men's NC2A mm-hmm. pre-selection psych sheets, and what you found to be the most surprising event choice, perhaps aside from Leon going with the 500 free.
Well, I think this is the consensus choice aside from Leon's 500 free decision, but I think Brendan Burns choosing to do the two back two fly double instead of the one back two fly one fly double was notable, because I don't think it benefits Indiana more either way, because Tomer Frankel is their only other potentially scoring swimmer in both the 100 and 200 fly. I think, to me, this is more of this is Brendan Burns' last year in the NCAA. He wants to do something that he's never done before kind of thing. And that's my speculation of why he decided to make the decision. But ironically, this is his first time in four seasons not winning the 200 back 200 fly double at Big Tens. Gal Cohen-Gromey and Tomer Frankel both beat him in the 200 fly at Big Tens. So I just think it's kind of funny that he's choosing to swim this at NCAAs the 1 year he didn't succeed. Well, he didn't win both events at NCAAs. I was expecting this because of his performance at Pac-12s, but I really like the move for Hubert Koss swim the 100 back instead of the 400 IM, because it reflects his event choices internationally. He seems to be putting in a lot of focus on the backstrokes, and doing the same thing in an NCAA format is going to help him ultimately.
I think these are two really interesting points. I want to hit Brendan Burns first. I'm glad you brought that point up, because I thought the exact same thing. I saw this and I thought, kind of odd that he finally chose to do this double the year he didn't win both at the Big Ten championships, but B, it's his fifth year. It's not even a senior season. It's his fifth season. Yeah. Last season in the NCAA, obviously. Yeah, it seems like he just wants to go for it. And I don't think it's a big hit to Indiana either way. I think he will score in both events, certainly. It would be a surprise if he didn't. And he's had plenty of experience doing this double, and so he knows what it takes, you know, to make it back and then perform well in both. So really excited to see him do this. We saw Reagan Smith do it a couple of years ago when she was racing for Stanford, and she did very well. She won the 200 back and tied for second in the 200 fly, I believe. So it's like, it certainly can be done, but it's always exciting, especially on the last day of NCs, to see someone do something like that. And then let's kind of shift the focus to the Pac-12s and to that Hubert Koch decision, because obviously ASU had some flexibility with their events. You saw Leon Marchand choose the 5 free over the 2 IM, but then choose the 4 IM instead of perhaps the 100 breast, as many thought he might do. But then Hubert Koch...
I didn't think he would do that.
I didn't either, but you know, it's possible, right? He could do it. But then Hubert Koch could have swum the 400 IM, chooses the 100 back. Do you think this was the right move for both of them? Just in a bubble, not looking at Olympic events later on, but just do you think this was the right move by ASU from a scoring perspective to have Koch in the 100 back on day 3 and Leon in the 400 IM?
I think it is a good option, a good decision, and I'm trying to find the psych sheets right now as we speak, but I think with Leon, he's a solid favorite in the 400 IM. It's his event. Mm-hmm. Out of all his primary events, the 400 IM is his signature. It makes sense for him to want to swim it, regardless of whether it benefits or not. And with Hubert Koch, him swimming the 100 back over the hold on. I'm looking at the psych sheets. I want to see who else ASU has in the
So I can tell you. In the 4 IM, they have Marchand at first, David Schlitt at seated second, Zalan Sarkani seated 9th, and Kale Martyr seated 10th. So that's 4 in the top 10.
Yeah,
for ASU. Oh, and then they have Daniel Matheson at 20th. So, you know, 5 in the top 20.
Yeah. And I think both, and then with Hubert Koch, I think swimming the 100 back gives him a better shot at winning an NCAA title. Because regardless of how good he is in the 400 IM, I don't see him beating Leon Marchand. Whereas the 100 back is a pretty competitive event where you've got multiple guys who are capable of going 43. And I think he has a decent shot at winning that event. And even though both the 400 IM and the 100 back are pretty strong events for ASU, because I think Owen McDonald is swimming the 100 back, Jack Dolan as well. I do think that ASU is deeper in the 400 IM, so having Koch as probably a surefire A finalist in the 100 back would be more beneficial than stacking him with all the 400 IMers.
Yeah, people seemed upset by this decision, or they said it didn't make sense for ASU. They said, well, if Koch is swimming the 100 back, why not have Leon swim the 100 breast?
But I think there's a difference between Koch swimming two events where he's equally good at versus Leon Marchand swimming his signature event versus a quote-unquote off event.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, I think this is a good move by ASU as well. And this is why I wanted to kind of dive into this, because people seemed upset by it. But, you know, people talk about how much of a momentum meet NC2As is. Arizona State's trying to win their first ever team title on the men's side. They are poised to do it, but they have to go there and execute. And I think from a coach's perspective, especially, you want to have as few variables as possible, or you want to give yourself the highest percentage chance to execute what you need to do in order to win that event or to win the meet.
Yeah.
Day 3 starts with the 400 IM. If you start with your best swimmer winning their best event, that is going to get the ball rolling in a very good way for the whole team, especially when in that event, you could have 2 to 4 A finalists all in that heat riding the wave of Leon completely dominating it. And that's how you want to start that session, I think.
Yeah, and the thing is, even though Leon Marchand is so much better than everyone else in the NCAA, the NCAAs is still a serious meet, and you want to maximize your chances. And the fact that he's choosing to swim his event is a sign that he's like taking the meet seriously and not really playing around. And I know he's the fastest relay swimmer in history, in the 100 breast, but it's not unreasonable to say that I think he has a better shot at winning the 400 IM than in the 100 breast. So it's not, this game is, this competition's not a gimmick for him. He's still going to take it seriously, and I think swimming the 400 IM is a sign. And it's different for the 500 free because he's the fastest of all time in the 500 free, but just about the 400 IM decision, that's
agreed. Yeah, like it is not a guarantee that he would win the 100 breast. Mm-hmm. He certainly has a good shot of it on paper, but it's not a guarantee. And mm-hmm. I think, again, ASU wants to make sure that they are placing their swimmers in their best events and maximizing their scoring potential. And I think this does that because they're already really stacked in the 400 IM. Hubert Koch is the top seed in the 100 back. You know, like he has a very good shot at winning on paper right now. And he's been having a heck of a year coming off of the 200 back world title and just riding that momentum in the NC2A season. So I really like this decision for ASU.
Yeah.
So moving on to the Pac-12 championships, we kind of talked about ASU keeping that momentum rolling, but did anything really stand out to you about ASU's dominant performance going back-to-back Pac-12 titles, winning the last ever Pac-12 title, and really firing on all cylinders, just putting on quite a dominant show?
I mean, this is what I've been saying about ASU all season. They just have so many weapons. And I'm not trying to speculate or anything, but it just seems clear to me that they want it more this season than Cal. And obviously, everyone's going to take NCAA seriously. But just the fact that Cal decided to throw away Pac-12s in order to prioritize long course, which is fine, I respect that decision, sort of just tells me that NCAA's is not a priority to them in the way that NCAA's is a priority to ASU. And I think that's going to show at NCAA's, because Pac-12s was a sign. You can't go all in. You can't not go all in and expect the same results as a program that is going all in and that just really wants to win that first NCAA title. And I think Pac-12s reflected it, and obviously the results were very impressive from ASU, again, as they've been all season. Hubert Koch is really establishing himself to not just be a scorer, but the one of the best swimmers in the NCAA. He's an NCAA record holder. And I think I'm going on a tangent now, but I think the fact that he broke the 200 back NCAA record, Ryan Murphy's record, after Destin Lasko had been knocking on the door of it for so long, and it was Hubert Koch who ended up breaking it, I feel like that's a big statement. That's a big statement, and I think just their team has just been so impressive from top to bottom, and I really think this NCAA title is theirs to lose.
Do you think that Arizona State might have gone too much in for Pac-12s? I mean, do you think they can carry this momentum into NCs and keep firing on all cylinders? And I feel like we're in this this very cool place in college swimming where the standards have been set so high, the fastest NC2A records are so fast now. And so it leaves a lot of room for people to swim really fast in season, but then keep getting faster and faster throughout the postseason. And we've seen that happen with every team, right? I mean, to qualify for NC2As now, you have to go so incredibly fast, especially compared to 5 or 10 years ago. And so we know that the potential is there for a team like Arizona State, who is pretty much swam lights out all season, to keep getting faster. But do you think that they will do it, that they can keep riding this wave of momentum and sealed the deal or just keep improving on their times. And then, you know, top to bottom, not just their top athletes who we're pretty sure will improve at NC2As.
I mean, the thing with improving in a team with a team like Arizona State that has a really, really experienced coach in Bob Bowman is that you get better with experience. Because I remember following ASU's results at the 2022 NCAAs where they finished sixth and there were a ton of swimmers that didn't swim to their full potential at NCAAs because they went all out on Impact 12s. And Bob Bowman talked about it. That year, they were rebuilding and they were new to this whole being a top team in the NCAA thing. And they learned from that. Next year, they did a lot better with holding out their seed times. There were a few underperformances, but for the most part, they did perform. Most of their swimmers did maintain or carry over their Pac-12 performances while also performing better. A lot of them performed better at NCAAs. And this year, they're going to have even more experience under their belt. So I can definitely see them carrying over.
I mean, I agree with you. I think they are the most poised they have ever been as a team. I think their chemistry is pretty great right now. But I will say that Cal knows how to do NC2As. And that is, the meet is in Indianapolis. It will feel like a home meet for Cal, because they will have 100 plus crazed fans screaming in the stands every single session. They will celebrate every single swim, every single best time one of their athletes goes. And not that other teams don't do this, but you very much feel the presence of the Cal fan kingdom at NC2As. And that is very much by design. Dave Durden has been doing this for over a decade now. As in being leading Cal to NC2A titles. So that's what kind of worries me from the perspective of ASU getting their first title, is that like Durden prepares the Cal men to be poised and to be lasered in and focused at the NC2A meet, not at Pac-12s, not at a dual meet, you know. Not any other time, but like that is the meet for them. And so, again, I've been saying it all season, I just want a great battle. And I think it's going to be a really exciting meet regardless.
Yeah, and I think Cal will still do good at NCAAs. But with the combination of ASU's momentum as well as Cal being a weaker team compared to last year, they've taken a few hits with Aaron Shackle redshirting, Matthew Chai is off the roster, and Hugo Gonzalez, who was such a big part of their previous championship winning rosters, isn't here anymore. So ASU has really gotten a lot better since last year, and Cal has gotten arguably worse, even though they're still a strong program. So just logistically, you have to take that into account as well.
Agreed.
So it's not just about Dave Durden being able to prepare Cal for NCAAs, it's also about how much room they have to fall back on. And I think ASU has more of that this year.
Definitely more wiggle room with ASU. Agreed. All right. We're going to move off of Arizona State and college swimming. We're going to go to the Westmont Pro Swim, where we saw a lot of the biggest names in swimming really show out. Simone Manuel had a great meet. Reagan Smith broke a US Open record, and then another pro swim record. Caleb Dressel won two events, allegedly, and overall had a great meet, even though there was the snafu with the 50 free. If you don't know about that, head over to Swim Swam or YouTube or Instagram, and we've covered it extensively. But in your eyes, Yin-Yin, for your money, who had the best meet in Westmont from top to bottom?
I hate doing this because I feel like it's boring and I say this all the time, but I have to go with Reagan Smith objectively, because I'm more so saying this because of her 200 back and 200 fly performances, because we're so used to her consistently going 57s in the 100 back, but to go 203 in the 200 back, which again only her and Kaylee McEwen have done ever, and 204 in the 200 fly in one meet is just extremely impressive in season. And again, it's different from the 50 from the 100 back because I think it's easier to go quicker in these shorter events, but to do it in what in two 200 stroke events with one of them being arguably the hardest event in swimming is just so impressive. And I think you have to give it to her. I think so. Simone Manuel and Caleb Dressel's meets were good from a comeback standpoint, but just objectively, I think Reagan Smith had the more impressive meet.
It is crazy to me that Reagan Smith swam 3/10 away from the world record in the 100 backstroke. 0.31. And I know three tenths is a lot in 100, but that's their second fastest swim in the 100 back ever. You know, like that's just so good. That's such a good swim. Just from anyone, you know, Kaylee McEwen, that would be a great swim. And then same for the 200 back, like 203.9, like you said, like that is a historic swim. And I think also her second best time ever, if not that close to it. So just Reagan did have a sensational meet, which was surprising. We've got an extensive interview with Reagan coming out soon, where she talks about having mono in January. She had mono in December in the first couple of weeks of January, and then she had to recover from that. And for her to be, you know, out and definitely physically taxed for a month, and then to like build back up and then to have a meet like this is pretty insane. I mean, to be that
Mom had mono and he broke an NCAA record.
I mean, exactly. It's just it's kind of a testament to the juice that ASU has going, I guess. They're doing something right, obviously.
Yeah.
Or mono must be helping. Maybe we learned this lesson in the pandemic. We're learning it again. More rest equals gooder swims.
No comment. No comment on that.
But it's pretty. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I think objectively she had the best meet of anyone. She had a really great performance. Someone who I thought went a little under the radar, but also had a great meet was Chase Kalish winning.
I thought you were gonna say Tori Husk, but yeah.
Oh, that's another great one. So Chase Kalish won both IMs, second in the 200 fly, at 29 years old. And like, I think we forget how hard it is to perform in a 400 IM at any age, but he's been doing it. Like, he made his first world champs team in 2013, over a decade ago, and he's still very much in line to make his third Olympic team, and, you know, like a 12th or something national team in the 400 IM, which is just a grueling event. Also very good chance to make it in the 2 IM and maybe even the 2 fly if he swims it. So just for him to put up the swims that he's been putting up, and again at his age, super impressive to me. And then you want to talk about Tori Husk?
One, Chase Kalish is not making the Olympic team in the 200 fly, as good of a swim that was for him. But yeah, Tori Husk, she just does not stop giving up on the 200 IM. I still think that Alex Walsh and Kate Douglas are probably locks to make the Olympic team, and it's them and everyone else. But just the fact that she keeps on improving constantly in that event is just so impressive. And even if she's not really swimming this event to make an Olympic team, just the fact that she has a 208, 200 IM in her arsenal just like that, like, I love that for her.
She was also
200 IM.
Tori was also 56.1 in the 100 fly, 24-3 in the 50 free, 53 something in the 100. She had a really great meet. She
went one double low, 100 back. That's really good for her.
Best time in the 100 back. So I did an interview with her, and she said that she had been on a new weight training schedule that was very challenging for her. She recently switched back to her old one, which was always the plan to do. She switched back to her new cycle of weight training, and that felt like getting a little bit of rest for her, just because she was used to it. And so she said she felt really good in the water at this meet, and it showed, because she had an excellent meet.
Yeah.
So that was really fun to see. She also said that because 50 free and 2IM are a conflict at trials, that will be probably a game time decision for her, whether she swims the 2IM or 50 free at US trials.
Yeah. I think if she swims the 50 free, I think she has a decent shot of making team, because I think that event's kind of a crapshoot.
Agreed. And there's a lot of fast women off the top. Tori, Abby, Simone, Gretchen all have really good shots. And then you have, you know, outside dark horses. That's if Kate Douglas doesn't swim it, which I don't
know. Kate Douglas told you she wasn't swimming it, right?
I think she did. But, you know, just want to add more drama.
You never know. I need to catch up. I used to listen to podcasts all the time. I have not in a hot minute.
Catch up on your podcast, Yin-Yin. It's almost NC2As. You got to keep up.
Yeah,
I got to keep up with the swimming content. All right. So that's the Westmont Pro Swim. That's our news for the week. Let's go over to Sink or Swim. First up today on Sink or Swim, easy one. Sink or Swim, we've already discussed it. ASU wins the men's NC2A title.
I mean, I already gave my reasoning on this, but I'm going to swim it. Yeah.
Fair enough. You just have to say sink or swim. I'm going to swim it also. Okay. I they look good. I think they can be poised. I think they're going to take down Cal. That's my official swim. Next up, will we see anyone have a start controversy or malfunction at Olympic trials, because we saw four of them this weekend alone at four different meets, including most prominently at the Westmont Pro Swimmer, Caleb Dressel's block didn't work right.
I'm going to swim it, absolutely. What is a big meet without a big technique/rule controversy? My prediction is that someone's going to false start and get DQ'd, and it's going to be someone with a really big shot at making the Olympic team, and it's going to cause a massive controversy. It's going to, similar to an Emma Wyant dolphin kicking situation.
That's hard. Yeah, I mean, I can remember several in the last few years, DQs or start malfunction things. I know at 2016 Olympic trials, Michael Chadwick slipped on the block and got 18th, I want to say, in prelims of the 100 free. He looked like he had a good shot to make the team in that. Ella Easton obviously had a big DQ in the 4IM in 2017. Emma Wyant DQ in the 4IM last year. Man, DQs in the 4IM, that is just rough.
In the women's 4IM specifically these past few years. What if it happens again in the women's 4IM?
That would be really sad.
I would be really sad for the person that got DQ'd. I just think it's gonna happen, because, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm swimming this also. I do think there will be some start malfunction. I take that back. I'm sinking it. I think USA Swimming will get the blocks right, because they know that Olympic trials has to be great because it's in a football field.
God.
And I think they're going to dot all their I's and cross all their T's for this swim meet. And I don't think we will have any start problems with or block controversies.
Not block controversy, but I think there will be a DQ controversy with starts.
Okay, I can go with that. I can live with DQs. I mean, there always are. I doubt there's ever been a swim meet that didn't see a DQ aside from like a summer league meet or something where the refs were just like, yeah, let it go.
Twins play.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right, next up, women's 200 IM gold drought. What that means is that the US women haven't won a gold medal at the Olympic Games in the 200 IM since 1984. 40 years. Will this drought get broken in Paris?
I'm going to. You see, I can totally see Kate Douglas winning Olympic gold, but because I want to be pedantic, I'm gonna say it. Because Summer McIntosh is the favorite. She's the fastest swimmer, out of all the 200 IM contenders, and since Kate Douglas and Summer McIntosh are never going head to head, I'm gonna say Summer McIntosh is better than her until proven otherwise. So yeah, sink.
That's fair, but it's a very sound argument. I really don't think Summer's going to swim the 800 free at the Olympics.
Please, if she swims the 800 free, I'm actually like I might start crying. I will be very upset.
Yeah, so I don't see that for her. I don't think she wants to. I don't see why she would swim it over the 200 IM. I think Kate will beat Summer? I don't. Yeah. I'm gonna sink it too. I think it's summer is coming. That's what they say, right? I would love to see Kate win US gold in the 200 IM, but I'll put my money on Kate, Summer.
Okay.
So I'll sink it too. Last but not least, ooh, this is a fun one because we have the man himself answering this question, which will come out later this week on SwimSwam, so stay tuned, listeners. Will anyone break one of Caleb Dressel's NC2A records at the Men's NC2A Championships in Indianapolis in just a few weeks?
I'm gonna swim it. I don't think it will be the 50 free, but in the 100 fly or the 100 free, I'm gonna swim it. It just seems like this year's the year. We've had a multitude of NCAA records get broken already, and people have been swimming out of their minds. So, yeah.
It's a little scary how fast this meet could be. We could see a lot of records go down, and we've seen meets like this in 2006 and in 2016. Notably, I think over half of the NC2A records were broken, like the individual records at least. Obviously, in 2009, a lot of them were broken as well, but. They kind of cycle around, and it seems like we're ahead of schedule for this year, where a lot of these records are in danger, and I am swimming it as well. Notably, I was just talking to Mel Stewart, co-founder of SwimSwam this morning. He sinks this all the way. He does not think anyone's breaking Dressel's records, but swimmers were within 3/10 of all of his records last year, and I think. I'm with you, Yin Yin. I
Yeah.
don't think the 50 is there quite yet. Jordan's gonna get close, I feel, but not yet. But 100 fly and 100 free, Josh has looked great this year. He was 3/10 away in the 100 free. Mr. Yusuf Ramadan was 3/10 in the 100 fly last year. And yeah, I think between those two, I think one of them goes down this year, which is crazy to say because it's only been 6 years. And we thought those would be around forever.
Records are made to be broken.
And that's it. That's our show. Thanks for tuning in to the Swim Swam Breakdown.